Hello and welcome to Unfrozen. This is episode 91. I'm Dan Safarik.
And I'm Craig Lindsay. And this week we are joined by Plant Prepreb Steve Glenn, here to talk about the LA fires and, of course, in Pacific Palisades. But also, of course, is this the moment of which modular housing perhaps has, in a tragic sense, have its breakthrough? We're having Steve on after Bloomberg City Lab ran a whole piece about the fact that people in the ravaged neighborhoods are turning to prefab as a way to quickly rebuild after the fires. And so we're very glad to have Steve on, who has, as you might imagine, a very busy schedule, to talk to us a bit about how Plant Prefab is lending its assistance in Los Angeles. So thank you, Steve, for joining.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
I guess the first question I want to lead with is what is it like? What are you hearing? Neither Dan or I, of course, are in LA. I have not been to LA since the fires began. What is the situation on the ground from your perspective here, as I would imagine, you know, rubble is being cleared, insurance claims are being made, and the first people are planning to rebuild?
Well, first of all, Pacific Palisades and Altadena, those are the two communities that were most impacted, but and even some in Malibu. 26 people were killed by the fires, 16,000 structures, and I think probably still counting. So it's really devastating. It may, at the end of the day, be the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history, surpassing Katrina, we'll see. We're not even 3 weeks, or you know, just a little over 3 weeks, so still very much an evolving situation, but lots of mobilization. Certainly, there is significant effort on the city of Los Angeles, and it's Altadena is actually unincorporated. It's in LA County, but to try to provide immediate relief and assistance to people who've been displaced. To organize the debris removal and then soil remediation. There's a lot of toxic chemicals and compounds that will have to be mitigated. It's going to be a lot of work for years, quite frankly, to get the communities to rebuild.
So the question then becomes, we've seen talk, at the public policy level about waiving environmental regulations, about doing everything to expedite rebuilding, which is, of course, understandable as a politician's response. But, there's obviously some significant room for error if we end up rebuilding exactly as we did before. What do you think is going to happen on that trajectory, and what role do you think prefab and or plant prefab can play in it?
You will have expedited permitting, which includes a waiving. You won't have to go through coastal commission if you're in a coastal commission area. Those are areas that are close to the coast. And there's CEQA, which is a kind of environmental review that may or may not apply that gets waived. But I've not heard, and I don't believe it will be the case, that there will be any reduction in any responsibility to build, either according to CalGreen or Title 24. These are energy requirements. And I think it is highly likely, and it is already the case in what are called WUI, which are the highest fire hazard zones. I believe it will be a requirement to build in a more fire-resilient way, and I think that's a good thing. Sadly, it adds costs, like full stop. There, we could talk about what that looks like if you're interested, but I sense that, and I'm glad, that the prevailing kind of perspective among policymakers is we can't build in a way that leaves these communities vulnerable in the same ways they were before. What's the role of prefab? Look, before the fires, construction labor was limited. It's scarce. A lot of people who worked in construction left the market after the downturn of 2008 through 12, haven't come back. It's one of the reasons why costs are so high. We, of course, around the country, but particularly in California, there's a disparity between demand and supply in housing. all this will be worse now in this area, labor rates, scarcity of labor. Oh, by the way, if there is mass deportations, that's going to affect the construction industry in a very significant way, particularly in California. So all of these are challenges to rebuilding. The good news is there are more and more companies offering off-site production. We have the only high-volume, high-capacity, automated factory in Southern California. We can do 1,000 to 2,000 homes a year. We're the only automated plant on the West Coast that actually does single-family homes. So I hope and believe we'll be in a position to help. We have built many homes for people of previous fires, Tubbs in Napa and Sonoma, Woolsey in Malibu. So we know how to do this. We know how to do it efficiently. We know how to do it sustainably. We know how to do it in a more responsible way with respect to fire resiliency. So I suspect we and others who work offsite will play an important role in the rebuilding effort.
What kind of volume do you think, I guess on two levels, would be required to replace what has been lost, assuming that that is the goal? And then out of that, what do you think the capacity is of the market to meet that need, and over what period of time? And I guess that's sort of like asking, and then how can prefab improve that?
Let me offer the following perspective. 16,000 structures lost. I think the vast majority get rebuilt. There certainly will be many people who choose to leave Los Angeles or the state, but I think the vast majority will stay. Kids are in schools, jobs here. Those aren't going away. Friends here. And, oh, by the way, we went into this with a deficit between demand and supply. So for all those reasons, I think the vast majority get rebuilt. And there is some effort to mandate in certain areas that there is actually, or allow for, greater density. So it may be that there's even more housing that gets built than might otherwise be there because of that. We can talk more about that if you're interested. So the bad news is, as I said, scarce labor already. I mentioned that. However, here's one bit of good news. In residential construction, because of the interest rate hikes over the last couple of years, activity, single-family home developments, multifamily home developments, is certainly way off the 2021, 2022 levels. So there are certainly general contractors and builders who have capacity, who certainly were doing far greater capacity in those years. So hopefully they'll be able to pick up some of the slack. We've certainly seen that in situations like this, it happened during Katrina, you have firms from out of town who come in to help. So I think all of that will come to bear, and hopefully that will ease the crunch that will occur for construction labor. And then, as I said, I mean, we just opened our factory in the last year. We have a lot of capacity, so I hope and expect that we'll play a role too.
I wanted to ask a bit about the insurance market. We know that the insurance market was already moving out of California because of the enhanced risk, and now, of course, what probably people couldn't have imagined to happen has actually happened. Where does the insurance industry's stance on modular? Because I know that they're rather conservative. They like models that they've seen before. So that would be, your typical stick balloon framing, 5/1s, in the multifamily zone. And then you've got, your typical stick balloon framing for single family homes. But, does prefab change the calculus at all for them? Do they get better assurances from the quality procedures that you have in a factory, for instance?
Yeah. So I've heard, so first of all, let me be clear. In California, and frankly, I think it's this way in every state, but I don't know for a fact, a modular home is legally the same as a site-built home. You can't discriminate against it with respect to zoning or even financing. Now, banks don't have to pay the payouts that factories typically require, but they can't say, no, we don't do prefab homes. Sometimes they get confused about HUD code because they can discriminate against HUD code. HUD code, or what commonly known as a mobile home, those are almost more like cars. They can't be permanently attached to your foundation. There's only limited financing for, so that's different. That's not the case with modular. Insurance companies can't discriminate. There's nothing on the title. It's a home. I've heard, though don't know for a fact, that some insurance companies actually will give you some consideration for having a modular home because they do consider them higher quality. But I don't know that for a fact.
Steve, I want to jump in. You in the CityLab piece, you were quoted as saying that you've received dozens of inquiries, and of course that you'd also done work with homeowners who lost their homes after the Woolsey fire in 2018. What are these conversations like? What questions do they come to you with, and how is their mentality after they've, of course, lost everything? But are they now open to new possibilities and rethink what it could be? But
I mean, look. These are people, and we've worked with a number in the past. Many of my friends lost homes, by the way, so I've also had kind of that a more personal perspective. But it's incredibly disruptive, and I mean, it sounds so flip even to say at that level. I mean, you have families who left with the clothes on their back and are just having to deal with absolute, the base of Maslow hierarchy of needs. You know, where are they going to be? Where are their kids going to deal with schools, getting clothes again, all that stuff. So people are stressed. People are trying to deal with immense logistics in the context of grieving and hurt and anguish and all sorts of stuff. I think for some, having some clarity about how this ends, namely, how do I get back to my home, my community? I think that's helpful. So I think that's why so many people are like, all right, I just need to start working on this. And you know, we're happy to work with them on that, of course. Some people are remarkably clear about what they want. And for some it's easy. I kind of want what I had with, you know, maybe a few changes. Oh, by the way, to get expedited permitting, it basically has to be your building envelope with no more than 10% variation to that. So to a certain degree, the city is kind of saying, look, you want a faster track, you know, build what you had from a building envelope inside. It doesn't have to be different. But so some are pretty clear, and others are like, I'm pretty open, and literally will say like, all right, well, you know, go to our gallery. We built lots of homes, different architects, because we can work with any architect. And you know, some of the people are like, I kind of like them all, and you know, that may take more time. But one of the things that we're going to be doing, we used to have standard homes. The brand's called Living Homes. It's the first company I started, actually, design firm. And Plant was spun out of Living Homes, and then Plant later bought the company. We're going to reintroduce the Living Homes. We worked with some great world-class architects on standard designs. We designed some on our own. So that'll give people an easier way to get started. And we'll add to that, most of the homes we've done are modern design vernacular, but we can do Cape Cod, we can do Mediterranean. I mean, any kind of rectilinear design, and we're totally fine to do that. So we'll try to get some architects who are more versed in that vernacular and offer those standards too, and make the process easier for people who are just like, yes, let's do that.
Well, I was also curious, I mean, amidst obviously, yeah, the shock and the grief, given that we've also seen images out of the fires of homes that were built with climate hardening in mind, particularly for fire resilience in terms of how they were designed, I was curious if people, if anyone has come to you with a sort of determination to build back with fire in mind, because, you know, there's already lots of talk at a policy level that this could be for fire what Hurricane Andrew was for Florida building codes in the 1990s kind of thing. Yeah. So I'm curious if you see that some same level of individual determination of I'm going to, you know, build a fortress against fire this time around.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think it's going to be a requirement. I hope it's a requirement. And literally everyone we've spoken to wants to do it regardless. I mean, so that's the good news. And, you know, there's some great best practices here. But I also want to be sober about the fact that this fire, which was very unique in terms of, you know, a perfect storm of events here, the Santa Anas, and particularly intense Santa Anas, the most we've had in a decade or two, and then this low pressure system that sort of locked them in, and a drought condition, extremely dry conditions in the landscape, combined to create not only a particularly violent set of wildfires, group of wildfires, but also very hot. And you get hot enough, you're melting rebar, you know. There's a lot you can do, but also if it gets to extreme conditions like this, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, I've been party to a lot of armchair quarterbacking, you know, in the aftermath of all this, where people are saying, well, you know, if these buildings had only been made of concrete or mass timber or something that's a little bit more that has a slower burn rate than you know, your typical platform or balloon framing, you know, it would have been okay. And I just don't agree with that. I see the images of the shells of buildings where the basic structure has been retained, but absolutely everything in it is destroyed. I mean, as far as the owners are concerned, the occupants are concerned, and the insurance industry is concerned, that's a total loss. So it doesn't really matter if the surrounding structure had been preserved. I think that seems like more of an argument when you're talking about seismic and you're talking about an instant earthquake event where it's the difference between you getting out of the building alive or not. But the fire dynamics are totally different. And in the fire dynamics that have been tested, I think, for these various materials are all presuming that the fire started within the building, and it's a house fire, it's a building fire, not, you know, a roaring tsunami of fire that's coming down the hill at you. So I think it's kind of a beside the point almost. It's almost more like an urban planning question of, should we even be building in these zones at all? Or do we have to engineer fire breaks in a totally different way?
And I hope that happens too. And that's for sure a much better solution when you're dealing with these wooey, you know, high fire zone areas, the urban nature interface. There's got to be a better transition.
And I know that the big argument, of course, you know, in favor of prefab, of course, is that it is extremely efficient. It uses less labor. It's actually safer because of the construction that occurs, you know, in a factory setting rather than on site. Are you, I mean, and I also know that you have a very strong design aesthetic. You hire all these great architects, and you've executed a lot of really, you know, beautiful projects. Is there a hope on your part that it won't just be a build as fast as you can kind of environment, and that there will actually be a raising of the overall design aesthetic in the reconstruction of these areas? I don't want to sound, you know, flip about it, in the sense that obviously the most important thing is that people have shelter and that it's safe. But, you know, is this an opportunity to change conversations about design that we've not been able to have up to this point because of the vagaries of the financing market, the insurance market, or the market in general.
Altadena had some incredibly beautiful, but both areas had some incredible architecture. That's my perspective. May not resonate with others, but I mean, objectively, from architectural historian perspective, you know, there were Ray Cappies that were lost and Neutras and in the Palisades. There were Gregory Ain homes and you know, Will Rogers home in the Palisades and Gregory Ain homes in Altadena and some incredible Spanish colonial architecture. So we lost a lot of great architecture, and there are people talking about, frankly, rebuilding some of them, which is awesome. Certainly, as we talked about earlier, there's a great discussion about building more responsibly from a fire perspective. I hope, and you know, sustainability is core DNA for us. We are a benefit corporation, registered benefit corporation. We're also B Corp certified. Sustainability is kind of core DNA for us, but I assume and hope that's part of the conversation too. On the, you know, what do we do about design for non kind of architectural treasures? You know, I sort of don't want to comment on that. I mean, some things that don't resonate for me, design types that you would see in the Palisades, but that's okay. People, our founding premise at Plant, we work with any architect. We don't impose any design doctrine. We only build in a responsible way. So if you're like, hey, I want to use paint with high VOC off-gassing, no, we don't do that. Or you know, non-recycled drywall, don't do that. So we'll say no, but we won't on the design perspective. Yeah, we don't do that. By the way, among the advantages you mentioned for prefab, I need to make a shout out for the biggest one for the industry, which is time. I mean, we build in parallel to the site work. That's a huge time savings, right? Normally a traditional construction process, very linear. You're subject to the vagary of weather and, you know, subs who may or may not show up. You know, you have to do the grading before you can do the foundation work and the utilities before you can do the framing, electrical, plumbing, very linear process. It's one of the reasons why it takes so long. With prefab, while the site work is happening, we're working in the factories. And a small group of us have automation. So we're even able to do our part way, way faster. So that's a big, and the reliability. It's one thing, you may get a bid from a GC. It's going to take me a year and a half, and here's the cost. But what number actually hit that schedule? And in fairness to them, weather delays and subs, but what percent actually hit their budget and their schedule? Prefab tends to be much more reliable. We're not, for example, subject to weather vagaries, all-weather facility.
That's a really good point. Is there a figure that you've been using or relying upon to talk about what the time savings actually is? I mean, it sounds like you're almost cutting it in half.
Yeah, 30 to 50%. And that's kind of a industry thing. Depends on the project and where. But in general, that's a good rubric. From construction time. You're not saving on permitting or even design. It's standard if you use a standard, sure. But I'm just talking about word go. And in LA, pre-fires, you know, could take you easily year and a half to build a home from start of construction.
Right. And of course we know that the there's, as mentioned earlier, there's a lot of environmental and regulatory hurdles to get through. And I'm actually pleased to hear that it sounds not as extreme as it was characterized in some media reports, where it sounded like we're just waiving all concerns about environment. it's more the particular California requirements that are the coastal area, as our reader or our listeners may not know, is it encompasses a much wider area than you would think. and the areas that are subject to CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, are what's everywhere in the state. Right? So if it's in the hands of builders and contractors and designers who care about the environment in the first place, I think we can rest assured that whatever they're waiving is only helping.
I think so.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you so much for your time. And this has been really enlightening to hear from someone who's on the front line of the battle to rebuild. And we're just honored to have you here. This is Unfrozen with Steve Glenn at Plant Prefab.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. You guys, I love your podcast.
Thank you.